If one is not interested in seeing what else is one interested, one can answer that that object which is seen is more interesting, right?
Is that the response? I would think that it's just the stories that is more interesting.
Without reality, there is no story.
But the story of visible object is not as interesting as the story of the flower.
But flower has different colors too.
Yes.
So Ken, when you say it's not as interesting as the story of the flower, that is basically the heart of the, one of the hearts anyway, the problem that faces everybody who is faced with panyatis, with concepts. We are very much attached to those concepts, the stories that we create about the different realities that we see. And because, quite frankly, we don't know, there's not enough experience of having a moment of understanding of reality, and so there's no attachment to that moment of understanding of reality, but there is attachment to the story behind the reality, and that's the problem that we have. A very warm welcome to Nina and Jonathan, because these two people, without them, we in the English group would have a very hard time. Nina has, of course, translated so many of John's books and written so many of her own that have helped us over the years to learn. And Jonathan, of course, and along with his wife Sarah, have the Dhamma Study Group online chat group going that has been a marvelous, also great aid in helping us to learn. So we're very, very fortunate that they made it. They made it today, and I'm sorry, Sarah.
For coming late.
They were discussing. John said a quote to the effect that realities are so amazing; they're beyond expectations, and basically, we are the as thinking in terms of selves all the time, which we do like 99.99999% of the time, we tend to find the stories about the realities being much more interesting than the understanding of the reality itself, because the understanding of the reality is so rare, like, you know, how often does it ever happen? And so we're stuck. We get stuck in the stories, and instead of instead of there being conditions for, say, sati or sati sampajanya to arise, to have an understanding of a reality arising at a particular moment. So I guess there's always. And every time we ask the question, what can we do, we can't ask that question, really, because it involves the idea of a self doing something all the time. And the more we can understand that, it's all because of conditions. This to me has been the most helpful thing, is increasing understanding of conditions, that there's not a self there that can do it. The other day, my son, he loves to, I have to say, argue with me. My son's a Buddhist monk, for those of you who don't know me. The other day, I, of course, there were conditions for anger to arise. My husband had said something, and that created conditions for anger to arise. And my son said, Mom, I don't understand. You study all this Dhamma with your teacher, and yet anger, you still get angry. I said, yeah, well, because there are conditions for the anger to arise, so I got angry. Okay.
So it's impossible to control anger. The first step is to learn to understand its characteristic as only a reality, a Dhamma, which arises because of conditions, and it takes a long time, because the Sotapanna, the person who has reached the first stage of enlightenment, still has anger but doesn't take it for self anymore. So the wrong view of self has to be eradicated first, and then there is a long way to the third stage of enlightenment, the stage of the Anagami, who has eradicated dosa, because the Anagami does not cling anymore to sense objects, because the clinging to sense objects conditions aversion. So the first thing that has to be done is knowing all the different realities that appear, so the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the body sense and the mind, and know their characteristics, so that little by little they are understood as just dhammas, which have their own conditions to arise.
It also means that there have to be conditions for patience to arise as well.
And there is no dosa when there will be more patience, and patience is a very important quality. It is one of the perfections which have to be developed together with Panya in order to once attain enlightenment. It is actually a chetasika, a mental factor, which is virya, which is translated as effort or energy. So when there is patience, it means not only patience for having not anger, but also patience for not giving in to sense objects, to pleasant objects. Different ways of patience.
May I just ask you to clarify something that you just said about that it's not until the level of anagami when attachment to sense objects is removed. And I think you then said, and therefore there is no more dosa. Is that what you said? That was a condition, like the attachment was a condition for dosa to arise.
Yes. So that no more dosa also, no more aversion.
But is attachment the only condition for dosa to arise?
Also ignorance, because ignorance arises with each unwholesome moment or akusala citta.
And also, of course, the accumulated tendency for dosa, which is eradicated at anagami path level.
Thank you.
The anagami eradicates the attachment to sensuous objects, but still there is also attachment to be left for arahata makka to eradicate. The attachment to becoming.
Pardon, may I ask questions? Since we are talking about anatta or
no self, say at the time of a baby's conception, the scripture says that there is a living consciousness to be planted in the mother's womb. Am I correct? So I would like to know whether that consciousness is a living being, a self, or how do you refer that consciousness?
It's all about moment. it's the rebirth consciousness, which is produced by a karma of a former life, or any life can be very long ago, and that arises, and that moment, that citta, has in it all the accumulations of kusala and akusala of the past. And at the same time, when it is in the human plane, there also rupa or physical phenomenon produced by karma arising at the same time.
But karma requires a living being to perform it, or it can say exist by itself without any living being or no self.
Well, what you mean by a living being, in conventional terms we can say a living being, but what is it actually in reality? Only citta, or consciousness, and cetasikas arising together, mental factors, and rupa, or physical phenomena. So, and they don't stay, they fall away. Because if you say a living being, it seems a being which exists and can stay for a while, but that is not the case. It's only one moment, and then it's followed by other moments of citta, many moments, and our whole life is a series of cittas which arise and fall away.
So the lifespan of a being begins with the parisadicitta and ends with the judicitta. So all that period in between is part of the same lifespan. So that includes the time in the womb and the time after conventional birth.
And also before.
It includes everything from the patisandhicitta to the jyotijitta. So the patisandhicitta arises at time of conception. So it includes the time in the womb and the time after conventional birth. So as your question, original question was, how do we refer to that, right? It's only citta, whether it's before birth or after. Citta and rupa, conditioned by the karma that conditioned the rebirth. So even before birth, there are rupas, right? After birth, there are rupas. Citta, cetasika, rupa.
Can we say only phenomena exist, but not say self or whatsoever? Only phenomena.
What do you mean by phenomena?
Situation, event, or whatever.
For example, what's an example of a situation or event that you have in mind?
Like the consciousness that comes at the time of the, say, bodhisattva moment.
Well, what is patisanti then? Exactly. It is a kind of consciousness. Parisanti citta is a citta.
So in your meaning, consciousness changes from moment to moment. Its quality changes from moment to moment, right?
Well, it's like now. Now, there are moments of seeing, and moments of thinking, and moments of hearing. Different kinds of consciousness.
No, I would like to refer to the rebirth consciousness.
Right.
Because
what is your question about rebirth consciousness?
Because
exactly?
Another scripture says that elements always exist, always perform their duties. They never die. They never fade away from this world. So consciousness is a type of element. And then there are six natural elements: earth, water, or what you call fire, wind, and space, and consciousness.
You are quoting from where now?
No, that is one scripture mentioning about the dhatu, or elements.
Yeah.
So consciousness is a kind of element. We say element of knowing or experiencing. So that means this type of element always exists and performs its duty of the
mind. Well, you're using the term exist, but we understand elements rise and fall away. Mm-hmm. So it depends what you mean by exist, but your question is about patisanticitta, right? It's an element, yes, it's a dhatu. Mm-hmm. But rather than saying it exists, we can say it arises and falls away. Just one moment of consciousness. And it's followed by other moments of consciousness that are not patisanticitta.
So that's why I say consciousness changes from moment to moment all the time.
It doesn't change. It rises. One moment of consciousness arises and falls away, followed by another moment, like now. Seeing consciousness, followed by thinking about what is seen, and hearing consciousness, followed by thinking about what is heard. It's different moments of consciousness, not consciousness changing. Because they are conditioned by different conditions.
So it's not one consciousness which stays and changes, not at all. Each moment is completely different. It falls away completely and never comes back again. And then there is a condition for another moment which arises, falls away and never comes back. It is said in the teachings in the Vibhanga, the second book of the Abhidharma, that seeing consciousness does not know hearing consciousness, and hearing consciousness does not know any of the other consciousness, because if one arises and falls away, another arises, but they don't know each other, they never meet each other, they're really completely different. But you can use the word element, because element means that which is not a self, which has only conditions to arise. So element is a very helpful expression, that what we call a being or self are only different elements, mental elements and physical elements.
And patisandhi is a function that certain jittas can perform. It's not so it's a function of we can say it's rebirth, whereby jittas, jetasika and rupa would remain in some kind of proximity, I guess, but other than that, I don't know exactly what the function is. I haven't thought about it enough, but suffice to say that once patisandhi arises, it is basically a new life. But it's a new life of realities rising and falling away in a certain, together in a certain way.
How about pavakajita? It also arises and falls away moment by moment.
Which jitta?
Pavanka.
Pavanka, yes. Sure. Why not? It's a different pavanga each time that rises, but it's the object of those pavangas within a particular, what we call in conventional sense a lifetime, the object of those jittas will all be the same. That's what. So that from, and because of that, in conventional terms, we say, this is a lifetime. And this is a person, this is you, whatever your name is.
The only phenomena that does not arise and fall away is Nibbana. Everything else must rise and fall away.
Ajahn, can you talk about the role of sanya, please?
It remembers now.
And what is the role of sanya when there is what we conventionally call thinking?
Without sanya, can there be thinking?
No. Can you talk a bit about...
Sanya arises with each citta.
And it marks the object of that citta.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Each cittasika has its own function.
Yes. So if we, when we are thinking about a concept, which is what we're always thinking about, if we are thinking about...
Do you know what is this?
Yes.
It's not you, it's sanya, which remembers.
You mentioned at one point it functions in some ways in each life, almost as a baby who is learning to identify things and talk.
If it does not arise before, there can never be the next moment which can remember.
Ajahn, may I just continue with Anne's question about sanya? Because the other day we were speaking about nimitta, the after image of a reality that arises. And you said that it is sanya which mistakenly remembers the after image as people and things. So sanya is making a mistake all the time. Maybe you want to correct that too.
Sanya itself can be kusla or akusla when the other cetasikas are rising with it. When the cetasikas which are unwholesome arises with sanya, sanya is unwholesome. And what about the Buddha's sanya?
Well, obviously wholesome. But the sanya that mistakes nimitta for people and things...
When it arises with akusala.
Yes. So when it arises with akusala, mm-hmm. and mistakes nimitta for people and things... What I was wondering was about if we take, for example, the story of Agulimana, and it would seem from that story that the sanya that arose had much akusala, and then on hearing the words of the Buddha, that changed in a way that I assume that we can deduce from the story meant that there must have been a high level of panya developed in former lives.
Yes.
So the mistaken view is no indication of the level of panya that exists.
There is also sanya with panya, and that is not wrong sanya.
And they are entirely unconnected. I think the mistake I'm making is I'm trying to connect those two things together, but they are unconnected.
Because citta arises one after another, mm. all the time. So at moment of seeing, there's no idea about people and things at all. But later, after that, the arising and falling away of the rupa, the visible objects, so very rapidly. So what is left as nimitta image is a real shape and form to be known as something, just to be known as something. It doesn't mean that it's wrong, but it is the concept of that which make known as that marks or image is.
What makes it akusala?
Akusala cetasikas. Because even Buddha knew who's who.
Yes.
Also, they arise with ignorance, usually 99.999% of the time. So.
Just talking about this delicious kanom which have been served. So when I first had this plate in front of me, I was not hungry. So I was like indifferent to it. And then I started to see some people having that. And just now I saw Kusuma had it. And I had the desire at that moment to have it as well. So it would be an instance of satsangkarika.
Do you have to name it? And didn't you have attachment before Kusuma?
Not to the degrees of, like, having the intention to have it.
Yeah. More or less. After eating it. Reality is so very daily. Each moment is that should be studied and understand, otherwise we will never know the truth of life at all.
A question from the floor here. Someone has been told that even for the arahant there is the possibility of further rebirth. What is the situation is according to the text? A question from the floor here. That someone has been told that even for the arahant there is the possibility of further rebirth.
So what does it mean by arahata?
That is what actually confused me, because according to Tripitaka and what we've been studying, once you become an arahat, you are an all-returner. So there's no more rebirth. But then I was told there are so many levels of arahat. And then once you become an arahat, and I was really, literally I should say the word boggled. I said, how come I haven't studied it before and never heard about it? So I said, okay, perhaps I'm going to see a child, I'll ask her. So please clarify for me, how did that idea concept into the... It's coming actually from Theravada monk. So that is why I was more taken aback. If it came from Mahayana or Vajrayana, I could have understood it okay. But from a Theravada monk, I was really confused. How come that concept came into the mind? Please clarify.
Well, I think by the very definition of arahant, there are no more conditions for any kind of vipaka to arise anymore. Finished. So how can he possibly have a rebirth for somebody that's an arahant? Because that's the end. That's the finished. They're gone. They go to some kind of parinibbana. Well, that's a wrong way to say it. There's nobody going anywhere. So It's basically the end of conditions that will bring the various elements together. So if somebody told you that, and you yourself know that it's incorrect, so, you know, just forget about it.
But then the thought sometimes, you know, you start thinking about it. What have we been studying and what you've been told? You know, the unconscious or subconscious mind starts to think about it. And then you start to rationalize, how come they say there are so many levels of arahats? And once they go to the different bhumis, and then they have to be, to go further up to that bhumi, they have to be that level of arahat. And I was just thinking, I don't know whether I've been studying correctly or what happens, or maybe there is a new version or something.
So there's a question of doubt that was arising for you. Well, basically, this is where the contemplation, if there are conditions for you to contemplate about it, then you probably find the answer that way. If there are conditions for the answer to the understanding for you to arise. So, but you know from Pariyatti learning that would be incorrect. So, yeah.
So don't worry about it.
I think this highlights the importance of understanding the words we are using without just repeating them and not fully understanding them. So in that situation, perhaps another time you could ask the person what they mean, what is meant by the term arahant. And that may give an opportunity for the misunderstanding to become obvious. As I say, it highlights the importance of every word that is there, including Dhamma, including Citta, consciousness, including Patisanti, and these things. Because it's one thing to learn the terms, having a vague idea of what they mean. It's another thing to understand properly each term that is used.
We are born because there are still defilements and the conditioned rebirths. There are ignorance and attachment. But for the Arahat, he has eradicated all defilements, so there are no more conditions for him. Because birth is dukkha. And it is dukkha to be born and to die again and another life and another life. But for the Arahat, it is the end of dukkha, that he doesn't have to be reborn.
Achan, I'm sorry for asking so many questions, but I'm leaving tomorrow. Yesterday, coming home in the bus, there was some discussion about visible object and about why it is mentioned so often. And you will talk about visible object maybe before anything else, maybe a little bit about hardness or a little bit about hearing, but always coming back to visible object. And we know that that is the first thing that the Buddha mentions when he lists that which comes to citta through the senses. Could you say a little bit more about why there is the emphasis on visible object?
If everyone knows about visible object, we don't need to say more about it. But now there is visible object. Who knows it? That what is seen is just that reality which can impinge on the eye base. Hardness cannot impinge on the eye base. People and things cannot. But that reality only can impinge on the eye base. So, who knows that now? What visible object is? No people, no thing in it at all. Just that reality which, as soon as one opens one's eyes, it's there. No need to say about it, because it appears. Without it,
can there be the idea of people and things with invisible objects? Can they be seen? No. But seeing sees what? This is the point, to understand reality as it is. Otherwise, it cannot eradicate the idea of self at all, because it is always something which is seen, but in reality, only a reality can be seen. Before there can be no one in it, it takes quite a long, long time to consider, not just listen and then forget, but now it appears, so it's time to talk about it, to understand it more and more. Until there's no one here, at moment of seeing, just the moment of seeing.
So it goes to the heart of ignorance.
Otherwise one thinks a lot about other things, not of that which is now appearing. So now, is there a little bit more understanding of whisper objects? That's why we keep on talking about it. Like Buddha himself.
I'm so glad that Ajahn always talks about visible object and seeing, because it's through eyes that we cling so much to the world around us and to beings and persons. And each time she talks about it, it can be a reminder, because we are forgetful. As soon as we walk out of this building, we forget again we are in this nice park and the trees, and we forget about only visible object which is seen. And we may wonder, what is it that is seen? But I think when we listen and when we hear more often about it, there are conditions slowly being built up, so that later on there are conditions for better understanding of what visible object is, not a thing in it, but just what appears through eye sense only.
Does it mind if there is no understand yet about of whisper object now? Does it mind?
That's what mind is.
Mind. Do you mind?
I think ignorance and attachment.
I think ignorance and attachment do not mind.
So at that moment, it's ignorance and attachment.
I think when we mind that we don't know yet, it shows our attachment. We want to know, but there are not yet enough conditions. So here the patience comes into play again. That it is really, we cannot expect to know it so soon after so many eons of ignorance. So just listening and considering more, and then, as Ajahn often says, Sankara Kanda, and that are all the Chetasikas, including the wholesome Chetasikas, not Sanya and Vedana, they develop or they accumulate, and they do their work, not we. We cannot do any work.
Sorry, Ajahn, I got confused between mind and not mind.
So how long it takes to really understand visible object? Just a characteristic of a reality, see, it takes quite a long, long time. And who knows, the person himself or herself only can know. Right now, this right answer for whether is how much understand about it. How much?
Very little.
Just answer the question from Achan. It's very, 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 very little of understanding.
Is it not good to know the truth?
Yes. Talking about ignorance, I feel very ignorant being here. I'm very happy to be here. It's my first time. Many of the things you talk about, I feel I'm not quite there because it's very new for me. But one thing I was very interested in, as there was a question asked about, is it possible to reincarnate as an arhat? And excuse me, I didn't remember your name.
My name is Betty.
Betty, you mentioned how in a situation of doubt, you actually have to see if the conditions will arise for you to find an answer. Because it's not the self that can kind of want to claim that answer or force that answer, but those conditions will arise if they are ready to arise. I would just like to understand a little bit more of what is it that causes conditions of understanding to arise?
What specifically are the conditions for understanding to arise? Can I ask Nina to explain? The conditions for understanding
to arise, yes, just listening very often to the Dhamma and hearing and reading the teachings too, but we can read with many misunderstandings too. But each word, as Ajahn often says, is very important to know the meaning and then to consider, not only listening, that's not enough. We have to consider again and again what is said and what we heard. And then there are conditions for the arising of understanding, its own conditions, not we who try. That is impossible. But from the beginning, we should realize that there is no self who can do anything at all. So we cannot do anything.
For example, earlier we were talking about how consciousness is momentary and how the consciousness that sees is different from the consciousness that hears or thinks about what is seen and heard. And before we heard that, it may not have, I'm sure it wouldn't have occurred to us to think of things in that way. But once, if that's heard, and because there is seeing and hearing and thinking now, there's an opportunity to, in a sense, verify whether what we've heard is in accordance with the way things appear to be. So that's an example of how gradually understanding can begin from hearing things and properly considering what we've heard. But another factor has to be added in, and that is that understanding has been accumulated already because the Dhamma has been heard perhaps in previous lifetimes. And so another way of putting the question is, what are the conditions for that accumulated understanding to arise in this lifetime? And the answer is the same. The explanation of the way things are has to be heard again because it cannot be recalled. And that is what is unique about a Buddha, that he was able to develop understanding in that lifetime without actually hearing it from another person. For the rest of us, it's, as Nina said, it's hearing and reflecting on what's been heard.
Because it is by conditions that you came here. You said it is the first time you came here, and that is it means that before maybe you can't recall former lives, but that you have heard the teachings again, and that made a condition for you to come here today.
The other thing to add is it's necessary to know understanding of what when we talk about understanding. And the answer is understanding of what is real at the present moment. Understanding that we are talking about means understanding by direct experience, not by gaining theoretical knowledge but by direct experience of what is real at the present moment. And that's why we are talking about things like seeing an invisible object, hearing and sound, because that is what is real at the present moment. So we talk about what is seen and thinking about what is seen, and thereby we distinguish between the idea of people and things and what is actually being experienced by seeing consciousness. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, yes.
Wow, you're doing well. Day one.
So it is the present reality which is all the stress, because it is not the names, not the terms in the book. That is, I'm so happy that Ajahn always stresses that it is the reality and that can be directly experienced. Because when we read the text, we may cling to only names, but that is not the essence of the teachings.
May I ask, when you come here, what would you like to hear?
It was just, I think, curiosity.
Yes.
I think I just like to understand Buddhism better. And I personally learn well in a personal context like this. So if you would give me a lot of books, it would be more difficult for me, but I like to just be part of a group that has experience and I can share. It's curiosity, I think.
And you heard about the teachings of the Buddhas?
Yes, but very little. I know very little.
Yes. May I ask, what do you get from hearing?
Maybe I can describe it as a contrast from my background being in Christianity. I think I've encountered Buddhism is that it analyzes life by saying, well, we see there's a lot of suffering in this reality, and where does that suffering come from? It comes from our attachment to things, and so if we could somehow overcome that attachment, we could also overcome the suffering. That's very probably overly simplified, but that is very much a contrast with some other religions that I'm more familiar with. So that's something I got.
Do you think that we come here to understand whatever appears, as the Buddha taught, because we cannot have the idea about it at all? For example, seeing, no idea. We see, but we don't know what seeing is. But now from hearing that seeing is a reality, it's real, it arises, it sees, that's all. So whatever arises and falls away, can it be taken for I? Or something stay permanent? Not at all. That's why what we are interested in is the truth of life, of whatever appears now as it is. For example, we think of I from birth up to now. But actually, without the different realities arising from moment to moment, there can never be the idea of I. But the arising and falling away of anything which has arisen is so very rapidly, because the next object in the next moment just covers the falling away of the previous one. So now it's not the same seeing as we have seen just a moment ago. Everything is like this, but it seems like everything lasts and nothing arises and falls away. That's why we learn to understand that we were born and hear and see, and everything in life only very temporarily. and life is so short, and if there is no understanding of whatever appears now at all, there must be more and more ignorance at moment of seeing, because after seeing there can be understanding or ignorance depending on conditions. If there is no hearing about the truth of seeing at all, there must be ignorance about it and wrong understanding which takes the seeing for I all life, all in one life. Never have any understanding about seeing that can be understood and can be directly experienced, the arising and falling of it, when panya or right understanding develops on and on and on, enough to begin to understand that it's just a moment, only a moment of seeing. It's not the moment of hearing or thinking or other moments at all. And since it is conditioned to arise, it falls away. No more, it doesn't come back. Nothing can come back at all after it has fallen away. So life is like this, just keep on going and going and going, never return.
Yes.
So what is the best thing in one's life? Best of all. What is the best? Best of all.
As you remind us, it's understanding of the realities that arise.
Do you own anything in this life? Does anything belong to you? The body, from head to toe, does it belong to you? No one can take it after death at all. Even seeing does not belong to you. Thinking, hearing, feeling, anything cannot belong to anyone, because they are absolute reality which nobody can control.
And it may sound a silly question, but somebody asked me the other day, if somebody is in a coma state, where does the consciousness of that person go, or where is it?
It's not dying consciousness yet, so there must be citta, which keeps on arising and falling away until it is the last moment, the dying consciousness.
But perhaps we who study Abhidhamma, maybe we can understand that it's the arising and falling of all the consciousness or citta or cetasika at the moment, everything. But what about those who don't know any background or don't have any background on it? How do we explain to them that where is the consciousness at that moment?
Are they interested to know? So they couldn't get it.
I think probably the question arose something on the sense that because they said once you are in a vegetative state, as we call it, the person doesn't know anything. And I tried to explain to them, I said, no, the person is still not dead as long as there is a breath there. And there is consciousness inside that is continuously rising and falling. But they said, then okay, tell me where it is. I said, I can't explain to you where it is, but it's there. I said, yeah, so...
So where is consciousness now?
It's at the moment where we are talking to you. Okay. I'm talking now, so my consciousness is at the moment with the talking. Or if I'm seeing something, it's there at that moment.
Where?
The eye's consciousness, the seeing consciousness.
At moment of seeing, is there other consciousness? And seeing consciousness arises and falls away?
Yes.
No self, no thing. So that person can understand the truth of life, realities.
they're not studying, or if they don't have any background, right, they don't understand. They
but
said,
for seeing, see, if that person can think about the mind or the consciousness and would like to find out where is it now, at moment of seeing, there is no other thing else at all. So at that moment, seeing is not that which is seen, different realities. So that which can experience is what you call mind or citta or whatever language, but it's there which sees. It's a reality. It's not I who see at all. Can that be understood for that person?
Not so sure.
What's the difference in appearance between a person who is in a coma and a person who's in a deep sleep?
Person like that, then they can see, they can hear. I mean, they are in contact consciously with the realities that are happening, that's arising and falling. And then at the same time...
No, to the observer, what's the difference in appearance between someone in a deep sleep and someone in a coma?
Moving. Moving.
Well, a person in a coma is also breathing.
Both have jittas, right? Consciousness.
From your Abhidhamma studies, you know that jitta requires a base, namely heart base. Yeah. So for the person in a coma, any reason why there wouldn't still be heart base? What are the conditions for jitta to arise? What kind of jitta is arising in the case of a person who's in a coma?
Pavanga jitta.
Pavanga jitta.
Yeah.
Only pavanga jitta.
I think there should be chetasikas also there, but then I'm not so sure that how many at that time are rising.
Seven.
I don't remember.
What's the answer to your question?
Please say it again, the question, so we can think, all of us can think about it.
Would you mind asking your question again? So we can all think about it. Yeah.
Back to the question.
Start again.
Okay.
Right.
It started that the person asking, when a person is in a coma state, where is the consciousness at that moment?
That person is not dead yet. So there must be jitta, consciousness, arising and falling away. But it does not see, it does not hear, and we don't know whether it thinks or not. What about... the one who is fast asleep? Does that person know who she is? Where she is? How many friends she has?
No.
Not at all. Mm-hmm. What about the person in a coma? The same or not the same?
It's almost the same. Yeah.
But jitta still keeps on arising and falling away as long as the dying consciousness hasn't arisen yet. Mm-hmm. But for the one who is not in a coma until they're seeing, hearing, after being fast asleep. So we don't know. A person in a coma, maybe that person can think or hear or what.
So
earlier we were talking about patisanti citta and a lifespan being the period between patisanti citta and jyoti citta. So for the person in a coma, as Ajahn said, no jyoti citta yet. So it's still the same lifespan, conditioned by the same karma that conditioned the patisanti citta. And either it's just bhavanga jittas, or it's bhavanga jittas and experience through the sense doors and mind door. Perhaps we cannot tell. But the jittas are still arising at the heart base, have to arise at the heart base, and the heart base doesn't go anywhere.
In part of the conversation I mentioned also, I said just like nowadays they have the machines, you know, to interpret. Sometimes the person, whether in a coma state, sometimes can use their fingers or their eyes to blink, and they can interpret from that what the person is saying, trying to say. I said, so that means the person's consciousness is still on and the person is thinking. But then he said, okay, you tell me, where is that consciousness at that moment? I just couldn't explain that.
If you put a piece of meat on the pan, on the fire, does it keep still? Or does it move just a little? Yes. It's like someone, it depends on the instrument can do like that.
Excuse me, consciousness being nama, can it occupy a space? No, so we can't really ask the question, where is it? Because it doesn't have a space to be where somewhere.
Ajahn, we're just wondering what you mean by the meat on the fire. Can you explain that, please?
Does it change? Does it change?
She means
does the meat change?
Meat put in a hot pan.
Yes, it gets cooked.
But it also moves.
But it doesn't
by the heat.
But in relation to the person, what? I don't understand.
Can it be also conditioned by temperature, heat and cold? You are talking about the instrument that can do something to the body.
The technology works, but then apparently so many people are able to communicate now, and then some even have written the books elaborating it and all that, but I haven't read so many books about it. I think I just read one book, and then there was some documentary that I saw, and then I kind of find fascinating about it, but the concept, actually I don't know what's the concept behind it.
It's the matter of rupa. Like the curly hair can be straight.
But this is in addition to what Ajahn said earlier, that the person in the coma may be able to see or hear. We don't know.
Yes, exactly.
Sometimes they can hear, but they can't respond, except in the way you mention sometimes. So that would be a movement conditioned by citta, not by temperature.
So when we say that he is not able to respond, does that mean that there's no condition for kaya vinyati and vachi vinyati? That's all? Or something else?
Well, first of all, would be the question of whether there's condition for hearing. And then if there is hearing, whether citta can condition movement.
May I ask a very simple question? What is real?
Sound is real.
And those are real.
What is real? What is real? Now.
It was clarifying to me, excuse me, I don't know your name. Jonathan, what you mentioned about direct experience. My naive answer would be my direct experience is what at least appears most real to me. My naive answer would be what appears most real is what I directly experience. You mentioned like the difference between theoretical understanding and like experiential one. So I would say for me, I think for many people, if they experience something with seeing or hearing, then it at least it seems real. But I think that that's being deconstructed.
Can you give an example? What's being seen now for you, Ajahn?
Mm-hmm.
That is the question.
At this moment, what is being real? Well, it seems to me very real that we're in a room with different people and I just still have the sweet taste of the kanom in my mouth. I'm talking right now. That seems all very real.
Is seeing real?
It appears to be real.
It sees. So, is seeing real? Otherwise, what can be real?
Mm-hmm.
At moment of seeing, seeing is real.
Mm-hmm.
And is that which is seen real? So, in the day, there are always realities, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, there cannot be being or things at all.
Mm-hmm.
But right understanding arises and begin to understand the characteristic which is real as no one at all. It's only a reality. For example, seeing is real. It's a reality. A dog sees, a cat sees, bird sees, elephant sees, ant sees. Seeing is seeing, not an ant, not an elephant, no body. Because seeing is a reality which arises to see. That's all. That's why we begin to understand what is a reality at a time. At moment of hearing, there is no seeing at all. So hearing is real at moment when it arises and it hears. And sound, is it real? Is sound real? Is it? Yes?
I think so.
Because it has its own characteristic, which can only be heard,
mm-hmm.
not can be touched at all, not can be seen. So sound is a reality, but sound cannot experience anything. But that which hear it is a reality, which whenever it arises, it experiences an object. At moment of seeing, it arises and it experiences visible object. At moment of hearing, it arises and experiences just that particular sound only. So no one there. And these are the absolute realities. Nobody can change its characteristic at all. Just arising and falling away by conditions. And that is called Dhamma. Whatever is real is Dhamma. Absolute Dhamma is Paramada Dhamma.
because no body can change its characteristic at all. And it is Abhidhamma, because it's so very deep and so very subtle. To really understanding it as no one there at all. So is there anyone at this moment? There is the thinking of shape and form after seeing, and there is the idea of something or someone, and thinking is real. And what is not real?
The idea of someone sitting here in the room having kanum is not real.
Is kanum real?
No.
So what is real when we take it from
taste.
Kanum? Taste is real. Visible object is real. Hardness and softness is real. So can we say that there are two worlds, the world of realities and the world of concept, idea, or thinking about that as something permanent? Is kanom permanent? It's here. Is it permanent? Is it real? Queen Alberta, please.
It's real as long as we think about it. It's convention. It's only conventional reality, because. As long as we think about it, it looks real. If the moment one stops thinking about it, it's not real anymore. I'm thinking about it. So
at moment of thinking, what is real?
And I have a question for our friend here. Earlier, we were asking about... where is citta, right? Where is consciousness? And we've just agreed that we cannot say kanom is here. But if we say seeing is here, what's the difference between saying kanom is here and seeing is here? Why is one correct and the other not?
It's the reality that is real. If we're looking at it and we see the eye consciousness see it, it's the form that is real, that's all. The seeing is the reality. And we think of the taste, it's the taste that the reality becomes. So it's there, that's all. Kanom is just the formation of our form, that the seeing is seeing, it's a kanom, so it's there as a kanom, that's all. The moment we don't think about it, it's not real anymore, it's not kanom anymore.
And likewise, when we say seeing is here, then it's just an idea of an idea of seeing, yeah.
Can seeing arise outside the body? So it's somewhere in the body. It's not behind, at the back. So there is a rupa which seeing arises there. Hearing arises there, not other rupa.
rupa means that which cannot experience anything at all. So there's not just one rupa. Any reality which cannot experience anything is rupa. Like sound, cannot hear or cannot do anything at all, cannot feel. Visible object cannot, taste cannot, odor cannot. Tangible object cannot experience anything either. And that is rupa. So we can classify realities into two categories. One, that which whenever it arises, it has to experience an object. It has no shape, no form, no smell at all. No one can see it, no one can touch it, because it's out of rupa, no rupa in it at all. It just arises and experiences in darkness, because in itself there's no light, no shape, no form. So what that reality can do, that which can experience an object, what can they do, or one at a time, what can it do? The experiences of visible object can see it, or can see only visible object. And its function is just to see. It does not arise idly, but it has to do something. And its function is whenever it arises by conditions like eye base and the visible object, it arises to see visible object, that's all. Can the seeing think? No, different moment. So there are so many moments in split seconds, uncountable.
When I came into this room, I just heard that Ajahn had said that it is miraculous that seeing can see and hearing can hear. That it is a miracle. Because seeing is the coming together of visible objects and eye-base, and those are rupas. And they arise for a few moments and then they fall away, but they can come together just when they have not fallen away yet. Then it is the exact moment, and then karma produces also the seeing consciousness. Was that what you meant?
Indra, is there someone going out? Only visible object with the four primary rupas only. But it is the idea of someone with such name, see? But actually, with our visible object and four primary rupas, no one there going out. And someone is getting in, see? The four primary rupas and the visible object. So amazing. And this is the beginning to understand that there is no self, no permanent being at all. Only different realities appearing just very shortly, so short. But the arising and falling away of the certain rupa, what is left is only the sign or the mark, shape and form of such visible objects. So it seems that there are many people in this room, but in reality, visible object and four primary rupas, hardness, softness, temperature, pressure, cohesion.
Ajahn, I have a question. So now I think we have agreed that the studying, the developing of understanding must start from pariyatti. And then from that, there are conditions for patipatti to arise. So, but to what extent pariyatti can be developed? Because we know that there are so many details about the realities, but like you explain very often that it's always what appears now. But does that mean that if someone heard the explanation that what is real now is to be understood, it's just something that happens by condition, then it's no one there, would that be enough for him to understand little by little that all the things that appear without having to learn about lobha and dosa and satsangharikam and so on?
You used the term everything. So can there be only something to be learned? Or everything which appears should be known?
Everything, yeah.
So your question?
So my question is, once Ippon has understood that whatever appears now is to be understood as no self, that is already enough to condition more understanding about realities, or there has to be many theoretical knowledges about different kinds of realities.
What do you think about, can anyone understand the whole teachings in a book thoroughly?
No.
So to what extent? As much as there can be understanding,
mm-hmm.
and as much as direct experiencing begin to arise.
Mm-hmm.
When it arises, it indicates that it's enough to be conditioned for such a moment, but not for many, many moments.
Mm-hmm. Very helpful, thank you.
Is anger real? Anger, is it real? So, is it you? So what is it? A reality. So there are only realities in one's life. Understanding is not ignorance. Attachment is not aversion. Each has its own characteristic, that's why it is Paramatta Dhamma. The absolute reality is nobody can change its characteristic at all. Is it subtle? Very subtle to understand. That's why it is Abhidhamma, another word. So Dhamma is Paramatta Dhamma, absolute realities, and it is Abhidhamma. Very subtle Dhamma. But they are all just Dhamma.
Ajahn, you will often say that trying to understand is a hindrance to understanding. And
excuse me, are you trying now?
That's what I wanted to talk about.
Or it's a reality which tries.
It's a reality which tries. There was thinking about something else, about this evening and arranging things, and then I began to think about, I'm here with you and I'm going home very soon, so it is good to listen. So it was like the self thinking, better listen. But nonetheless, the attention to what you were saying came back. So it is easy to think that there is a self there, or there is like, I know that is a kind of trying, because it's like trying to control where the attention is. But what is it that comes back to listening? Because it's not self. What is it that comes back to listening?
Different realities.
Different chetasika. And clearly there's no understanding of what those realities are at that moment. Because there's doubt about one kind of thinking and then another kind of thinking.
Is doubt a reality?
Yes.
Everything which appears as it is a reality. Doubt is doubt. No one there. There are conditions for doubt to arise. Doubt about what?
Just about everything.
Just about everything.
And so trying to understand is also very subtle. Not that was such a subtle example, but it's
not
subtle.
Not you, not anyone, but a reality which performs its function like that.
I wonder if there's a difference between trying to understand the meaning of what is said versus trying to understand what appears.
I suppose it's the effort in the wrong effort that is involved in terms of the wanting to. That I would think that to be the difference, the attachment that can be present in either of those situations.
So, effort is not you, right?
No.
It's a reality, and it does arise with some jittas. It does not arise with all jittas. For example, seeing right now doesn't have effort with it. No need to have effort. It just happened, occurred by conditions. Without ibis, no seeing, no need to have effort, only ibis. And that which can impinge on it can condition seeing. Citta and jetasika arising to see. But at moment of doubt, it's the effort. See, Buddha thought in detail about all these.
Ajahn, that is very helpful when you say that trying to understand is also a reality, because there is often the feeling that trying to understand is not, we don't want it, it's not good to have, right? So thinking about it in terms of just another reality is very helpful.
So the study of realities cannot be ended until one has become an arahata. But even so, in the time of Buddha, they also went to see and listen to the teachings of the Buddha. So one knows oneself how little or how much one understands realities right now. And can the arising and falling away of realities be known, be directly experienced? If not, there's no Buddha's disciples at all.
So the Buddha's disciples they are a demonstration of the truth of the teachings.
How? Demonstration?
You mean proof?
Yes, yes. Sorry, proof. By way of that they have, we're talking about the disciples in the Buddha's time, are we?
Any time.
Oh, any time. I think I won't comment about any time. Because that includes us.
Because what we mean by Buddha's disciple?
The followers of the Buddha.
With understanding. Is now not moment of developing understanding? Little by little.
Okay. I came here for the first time, and it's a good chance for you to ask questions.
I hope I'm not lowering the level of the discussion too much.
On the contrary, we like it very much.
Thank you so much for explaining things in a way I can understand. I guess a very fundamental question that comes up in my mind is, from what I'm hearing, it's, I don't know if I'm saying it in the right way, but it seems that we are naturally tending to not understanding things, not understanding reality as it is. But we can actually develop understanding that's possible for us. And I would just be curious to know, why is it like that? Why do we find ourselves in a condition of not understanding? What is the origin of that, or what causes that? Why don't we just understand, or all live in Nirvana, or
no? We ignorance is ignorance at moment of not understanding. No one can change it to be understanding. Now you can prove there is seeing is the understanding of seeing. Or understanding, not understanding, or understanding, seeing rather. Hearing occurs at that very moment after hearing. Is there ignorance, not understanding, or understanding? See, two different kinds of realities, they are not self. No one can change the characteristics at all. Ignorance is conditioned. And right understanding is conditioned too. At moment of hearing the teachings, if it's not wise attention, thinking, considering what is true or what is not, it cannot condition understanding. So the conditions for understanding is wise attention to what is heard about reality. For example, what is appearing now, see, at moment of seeing? No understanding before hearing the teachings. There is always the idea, I see something, I see person, I see many things. But actually, that which can be seen is only a reality. Not sound, not smell, not taste, not hardness, but that which is now appearing only, no matter we call it or not, it's a reality because it's there to be seen, just to be seen. And that is a reality, and that is meant by a reality. But after that, there is the idea of thinking about shape and form and idea of things and people. And thinking is real. But the idea, how come without memory, to think about that which has been seen. Each moment is conditioned. So now, understanding is conditioned. Mm-hmm. And doubt also is conditioned to anything which arises. Doubt is doubt, it's a reality. And doubt can be eradicated only when at the moment of enlightenment, the Four Noble Truths, doubt can be completely, absolutely eradicated. No more doubt about seeing, about that which is seen, about hearing, about thinking, about different ideas or different happenings in life.
So can we say that no doubt at all now? Because there is doubt about the arising and falling away of seeing. But seeing is not moment of hearing. No doubt about the difference, realities. No doubt about different conditions. Because right understanding begins to understand intellectually that seeing is just a moment which is conditioned. Is there the first moment of life? It seems like very difficult question, but actually it's so real. Is there the first moment of life? Yes, it's conditioned. That's why people are different, because of the different of the conditions. And not only one condition, there are more conditions. That's why even the body, the citta, cetasikas, the consciousness and the mental factors are different at a time, all the time, uncountable. And when we talk about the absolute realities, we don't talk about people and things. We talk about just seeing. Seeing is seeing. Seeing is not a cat, a dog, or human being. Seeing is a reality which sees, that's all. No matter here or in heavenly plane, anywhere. Whenever it arises, it sees. So it cannot belong to anyone.